At Best Western, we can't promise you the perfect family beach vacation. We can't promise that it won't rain, or that you won't get a sunburn, or that your family won't endearingly call you Lobster Mom for weeks afterward. What we can promise is a warm welcome and a comfortable room amidst all the joyful chaos. Lobster Mom. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western, with over 4,200 hotels worldwide.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. Mixed with blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar for the perfect balance of sweet, salty, and sour every time. Discover legendary taste with Cayman Jack, America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Today, we're going to be talking about something that until recently, we didn't hear nearly enough about. And joining me is my longtime friend. I love this woman so much, and I haven't seen her enough in the past few years. So you will hear all of the joy in my voice in this episode that I get to talk to her, my friend, Stacey London. Now, you may know her from her hit TV show, What Not to Wear. She taught a generation of us what not to wear. And we're going to get into a little bit of that today. A little bit about how do you dress when you reach a certain age? Do we change how we dress? How do we dress to make ourselves feel incredible? Stacey's very good at that. I mean, she's built a whole career off of it. She's a fashion genius, is what she is. But first, before we dig into style and fashion and all of the things, we are going to talk about perimenopause and perimenopause influencers. When Stacey was going through perimenopause and menopause herself, advocacy and education for women's healthcare became her new passion. And she's been working her ass off to break through all of the noise and BS around perimenopause, and we are going to get into all of it. All of it. We're also going to dig into something that I think is so important, which is the fact that there is value in age. There is value in aging. And Stacey has an incredible line in this episode that I love that just, it stuck with me. It really did. She says, "Menopause is Mother Nature's biological failsafe to make you sit up and realize that you do not have an expiration date. But the values that you held when you were younger do have an expiration date." Think on that one, my friends. You're going to love this episode. Hi, old friend.
This is such a joy. I mean, I am telling you, I can't believe it's taken us this many years to have a conversation. Why not do it on a podcast?
Why not do it on a podcast, right? Because just, I mean, all the things are streamed all the time. I just, when we were just catching up a second ago, I was like flashing back to drinks we had at the Spotted Pig probably 15 years ago.
Oh my God.
We were both completely different people.
Yeah, completely different people.
Completely different people.
And I also remember when we were at South By and we went vintage shopping.
Oh,
and you got that amazing hat.
That amazing hat.
Mm-hmm. We had a conversation then about marriage and about children. And you went on and lived that exact experience. It was like you manifested your life so far in front of it. I am to this day impressed. I mean, there's some witchy witchness there. It's amazing.
I mean, to be honest, after writing Sicilian Inheritance about my potential witch great-great-grandmother, yes. I am a Sicilian witch. I think I might be. But yeah,
so,
I feel
grandmother is Sicilian too, and I'm like,
no.
I'm dying to read the book.
And oh my God, I'm gonna mail it to you immediately because you have to read it. Yes. Yes.
I do actually think there is something about witches and Sicilians that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yes, yes, 100%. Absolutely. And you're right. I did. That hat that we bought at that wonderful vintage store in Austin.
Feathers.
I ended up
called Feathers.
Feathers. Yes. Yes. It was so good. I ended up wearing that when I met Nick in the Galapagos Islands. Like I yes.
Okay, so look at that. Our connection goes even deeper than we thought.
It goes even deeper than we thought. It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And so, yes, we have both evolved in so many ways, and the world has evolved in so many different ways since then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, talk to me about, I mean, we are both women who are, we were much younger then, and we are aging, and... We are aging beautifully. You look amazing.
Yes,
but there are stories that we don't tell about women of a certain age. There are gaps in our culture in, you know, showing women how to be in the world, what to wear in the world. Mm-hmm. What have you been seeing in this space?
I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I have definitely learned, and certainly I think over the last 15 years, we have seen this, and partly because of social media and technology, but this need for authenticity and this need not necessarily to constantly be confessional, but to talk about ourselves in real terms instead of this kind of glossy, like, you know, let's say when I was on What Not to Wear. That was back in the day when you had a television persona and a private life, right? Mm-hmm. Now there's this blur between everybody's a brand because of who they are, which is something that I like to talk about between we were a how-to revolution, like, you know, a how-to generation where we looked to experts and we wanted advice to a me-too generation where we have become our own brands and our own sort of auteurs of what we look like, how we want to, you know, sort of experience and appear in the world. So it's very different from, you know, like 2003. But one of the things that I really have felt all along, and maybe this is actually from my experience on What Not to Wear, is that from the individual story, the more personal and authentic it is, comes a universal truth. There is always something, whether you relate exactly to that person or you have nothing in common with that person, the more authentic you are talking about the human experience and journey that you are on, the more people are going to understand and relate to it in some way. And that has been sort of a guiding principle for me, certainly in the last 15 years. And, you know, when I, you know, my phone stopped ringing and I stopped getting called for TV jobs and styling jobs and not really being sure what to do. I was very open about feeling a certain amount of grief over this loss of identity. And I was very open about the fact that having spine surgery was very difficult and truly traumatic for me, as I was very honest about losing my father and how traumatic, and I had no idea what that kind of grief was going to be. Mm-hmm. And to experience that all at around the age of 47 to 49 really was also when I was in the depths of what I did not know were significant hormonal changes called perimenopause, right? Nobody, no doctor said anything to me. Nobody said anything to me for the longest time. And I was feeling a real emotional upheaval, anxiety, depression, rage, just constant insecurity. I just hid away from the world. I was having physical changes like body weight redistribution. I had headaches. I had joint pain. I had insomnia. I had brain fog. I mean, you name a symptom, and I pretty much had it. And I thought, this must be the physical manifestation of grief. This is what getting old feels like. Nobody once ever said to me, hang on, this is a natural transition that we need to take seriously and that we need to reframe in order for you to get on the other side of it and feel like you have done something successful. And it's funny, I heard Jodie Foster say recently, like, even in her 50s, she was still like, you know, I don't know how I'm handling this aging thing or whatever. And she got to her 60s and she's like, everything feels so much easier. And I do not at all think that that is unrelated to hormonal transition. And so once I started to learn about perimenopause, and I had to do a lot of that work myself, then I started going to my doctors and being like, what about this? And fighting a lot of what is, you know, sort of was common culturally and medically at that time known about menopause, right? Hormones are dangerous. They're going to give you cancer. Nobody can take them. So doctors stopped learning about menopause altogether. When you put all this stuff in context, specifically for Gen X, I think you realize that There is a reason that Gen X's legacy is going to be not only to normalize midlife, but to normalize this entire experience, and therefore to change the way we kind of think about aging. Because I think of us as, you know, the scrappiest generation, right? We're the latchkey kids.
Yes.
We have to figure everything out for ourselves.
Which I think about this all the time, by the way, as I'm raising my children alongside a lot of parents who I would call helicopter parents.
Yes, yes.
And I try not to be that because I don't think it's good for them. I mean, I think about 80s parenting all the time when we were just like told to, first off, like go play in the neighborhood. Don't come back till dinner time. No one was given a water bottle. There was one source of hydration in that neighborhood and it was someone's hose. And it may or may not have worked.
Or it was a public water fountain in Washington Square Park in my case. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That was the deal. Yes, exactly. And but I also think that that has made us a very tough generation. And we don't take no for an answer quite as easily as maybe some other people would. And when Gen X got to midlife and there were no answers for what was happening to us medically, really, truly, physically, emotionally, all of the things, we were like, oh, no, this will not stand. Right. And
yes.
We started doing our own homework. There is a reason that it is Gen X. And at this moment in history, that I think we are starting to normalize this conversation, not just about menopause, right? We were already talking about fertility. We've always talked about adolescence, but now we're talking about the continuum of women's health and how women have always been taught to be afraid of their own bodies, ashamed of their own bodies, instead of the actual independent medical research that should be done on female physiology. And I don't care how you identify gender-wise. I'm just talking about if you have female physiological parts, we don't understand that because it's only been since 1993 that women were legally bound to be in medical testing. So everything before that was that, oh, if men experience this, women must experience it the same way because they're little men, which is just not true,
yes,
right?
Which is just not true. Yeah.
I mean, the iniquity is astounding. And the systemic issues are astounding when you look at them through this healthcare lens. And of course, I got into all of this because I felt so disempowered, spending most of my life in fashion and style, which everybody considered, you know, like a sexy profession.
Oh, really looking, so fancy. I was so starstruck the first time we met. You were so fancy.
Fancy. But that's the thing. I thought it was fancy. It was one of the reasons that I was so attracted to fashion magazines, May They Rest in Peace, when
May
I worked
rest
in them
in
the 90s, right? Because I was so insecure and I wanted to be fancy and I wanted to be fabulous and I wanted to be all those things. And what better place to, you know, kind of get that superiority complex than working for an industry that at the time really were the gatekeepers of style. We knew about every fashion show 6 months before you knew about it, right? All of that, the playing field has been completely equalized now. You can watch a fashion show exactly the same time Anna Wintour does. So she doesn't have a leg up on you anymore. The fashion industry in terms of magazines, we don't have a leg up on you. But at the time, I thought, oh yes, you know, this is where I want to be. Only to find out that this is an industry that actually runs on insecurity, right? What you don't have, what you are not, is exactly what they're trying to sell you to be. And I had to learn that from being inside the fashion industry. Getting out of that and going into what not to wear really was about what is the power of self-expression? What is the power of self-esteem? Taking fashion out of trend and into this idea of self-identity, expression, in a way that was very different from what I'd done before. And that's when I started to connect style much more to the idea of how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about the world, how we interact, whether the way we appear in the world is aligned with what we want from the world. Are we saying the right things to get the right messages back? It became a much bigger psychological endeavor, right? And for me, that made all the difference in the world.
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes.
I'm not sure where I was going with that. I know that I was that fashion magazines were so fancy. But that I feel that really what I wound up feeling was that style is not something superficial, right? The fashion industry, the beauty industry, we're going to sell you something new every week. But personal style is so much more. And we have so much agency if we know how to do it, right? If we know what we like and what we don't like. But when I started to experience perimenopause, I never felt more disempowered. I never felt like I had less agency. I never felt more helpless. And for me, there was an actual like aha moment where I was like, I have to take everything that I have done in the style sphere and put that towards advocacy for healthcare. Because we, the same way we can't take care of ourselves if we don't have an actual understanding and awareness of who we are and what we want, the same thing is true in healthcare. The same thing is true about how are you going to take care of yourself in menopause if you don't know that you're going through it? So education and agency and advocacy all became really, really important topics to me because I recognized that style wasn't superficial. It was something much deeper. It gave us much more control over our own lives and what we wanted them to be. And we need to look at healthcare the same way in terms of our health span and longevity. You know, when I go to the gym now, like when I was in my 20s, I always say like, you know, it was like punishment, right? I ate a candy bar. Now I've got to lose 10 pounds. I would be on that treadmill for an hour. And, you know, I would just be, it was miserable. I hated working out. I hated it, hated it. I go to the gym now because I want to be strong. And I want to know that when I'm 85, I'm not going to fall and break my hip.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think about the broken hip too much, probably.
I'm like,
you want to be strong. You want to be mobile at 85.
Yes, because in our 40s and 50s, when we start to lose our parents, when our kids start to get older, 45 to 55, Scientific American once said, is the lowest point of happiness in a woman's life. Highest increase of depression, divorce, and decreased earning potential. These things are not by accident. That is when we are going through perimenopause. That is when it happens. And of course, if you feel completely overwhelmed by external stressors when you're least able to handle them, you're going to feel this kind of sense of being completely overwhelmed, right? And we conflate what is happening hormonally with aging. And we know that we are a youth-obsessed culture. Well, why? Why are we a youth-obsessed culture? Like, is it just because like, oh, that's the coolest new thing, and so whatever is new is cool? Or no, if you look back sociobiologically, youth is associated with fertility. And how do you further the human race? You got to get people pregnant. That's why youth matters, right?
Truth.
It's very different from the the cultural layers of what we have kind of laid over that sociobiology. Culture has actually gone far past that. So this idea that youth is to be prized above everything else no longer makes sense in the society in which we live. It's not like if you stop getting your period and you are no longer biologically able to have children, you have nothing to contribute. You know what I mean?
It's yes.
Like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? We don't live in that world anymore.
We don't live in that world. And that's the thing that got me so riled up, right? When I realized that, A, we are at, you know, we are really not on a level playing field because women do not know enough about their own health to take care of themselves. We've been busy taking care of other people. What really occurred to me was that culturally, we've internalized all these things so that we don't believe that getting older has any value, where, you know, there is so much value in age. There is so much value at this particular age. And I actually believe that menopause is sort of Mother Nature's biological failsafe to make you sit up and realize that you don't have an expiration date. The values that you held when you were younger do.
Oh. We are going to take a quick break here. Be right back.
When I'm looking at the next 12 months of my life, what I do not have on the books and what is impossible for me to have on the books is a trip to Sicily. However, the next best thing to having my own adventure in Sicily was reading Joe Piazza's new novel, The Sicilian Inheritance. It is a vacation in a book. If your vacations were sexy murder mysteries that also dive deep into generational trauma, but not in too heavy of a way, it is the perfect book to take on a plane. It is the perfect book to read next to your public pool while taking breaks to yell at your kids. It is the perfect book to get you out of a reading slump, and it is available now wherever you get books.
Okay, we are back. When we left, Stacey had just said something that blew my freaking mind. Menopause is sort of Mother Nature's biological failsafe to make you sit up and realize that you don't have an expiration date. The values you held when you were younger do. I love that. Dig in. Tell me more about that.
I want to give credit where credit is due. My friend Rebecca Odes and I have been working on a project together. Mm-hmm. And she was the one who said to me, that's the switch. That's the flip. We are not the ones with an expiration date, right? Think mm-hmm. about what we value when we're younger. We care so much about what other people think. We're in our what I call acquisitive stage, mm-hmm. position stage, right? The more toys you have, the more you win. You want to show mm-hmm. off your clothes. You want to, you know, you're whether you're peacocking for a mate or a job or whatever it is, right? That is sort of what your 20s and 30s are meant to be. You're figuring out who you are. You're trying sort of personas on, you know, mm-hmm, in order mm-hmm, to see mm-hmm. what sticks and what fits. But by the time you get to your 40s, you're already starting to build a life, whether that's within your family or whether that's within your career, that becomes a little bit more stable. And as we age, what I think is that we stop needing so much external approval in mm-hmm. order to do what we want, in order to feel what we want. When I was 47, I wrote this article for Refinery 29 when I was like, just my pockets are out of fucks to give. I don't care.
Oh, I remember. Yes. I remember that story.
I look back and I realize how much I didn't understand about what I was going through. But it also stands the test of time in that I was like, I don't dress in pencil skirts and 5-inch heels anymore. I like wearing suits and leather jumpsuits. And you may not know that about me, but that's who I actually am. And this idea that I was going to disappoint an audience who knew me from What Not to Wear by not being the styled person that they expected me to be was something that I was ready to let go of. And I think as we age, we are ready to let go of cultural expectations more and more and more. And the more that we're able to investigate them individually and realize sort of what we've internalized from society and culture, certainly through a patriarchal lens, then we can say, okay, wait, do I actually believe that? Or I've been taught to believe that. And what is a belief, right? A belief is something that you just think over and over and over again until you think it's a truth. So you have to go back and decide, wait a second, are these things true? Do I believe mm-hmm. them to be true? What is my mm-hmm. actual opinion? And as we age, I think we become more discerning in that way. And that is an incredible privilege, but it is also an astronomical sense of freedom. And being on the other side of menopause now, I can say that with real certainty, because having been through all the muck and not knowing how to figure it out until I figured it out for myself, I'm really starting to feel that, like, honestly, almost the last 10 years have felt very confusing and very disorienting to me. And I'm finally starting to feel like there's a little bit of the righting of the ship, because A, I am out of fucks to give.
You thought you were out of fucks to give before, but now you're really out of fucks to give.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and the thing is, I'm like, I was a people pleaser. I definitely was a people pleaser with the medical profession. So by the time a doctor said to me, oh, maybe it's menopause, she was so dismissive about it that I thought I was mm-hmm. overreacting, right? I mean, it's my fault. Yeah. It can't be. I was like, wait, you are not the doctor that I should be talking to, because you are not actually taking my pain, my emotions, or anything that is happening to me physically into account with the gravity of, in which I'm feeling it, right?
So, yes, of which you should be. You should be.
Of course. But I think we as a society are getting much stronger. And particularly, I see Gen X women at the forefront of that movement of fighting for your own self-advocacy and learning enough to be able to stand up to your doctor and say, hey, this is not the care that I need. Not because you know what kind of care you need, but if a doctor is not listening to you, or if you are in that range of perimenopause, right, that can start as early as 38, but let's say it's starting at 45, 46, 47, something like that, right? And you go to your doctor and you say, all of a sudden, like, I am depressed. I am struggling mm-hmm. to get out of bed in the morning. If the first thing they do is throw a pill at you, they are not actually looking at what might actually be happening to you. That's just an easy thing to do, right? We have 10 minutes with most of our doctors. Think of
3 minutes
that we're getting dressed or undressed. We have so little time. And so I used to get really angry about this idea that we need to list what our issues are, from like most important topic to discuss with your doctor to least important topic, to make extra appointments about things that are very specific, to know how to do all of that stuff. I was like, God, why is the onus always on us? Why doesn't the medical community, you know, take more responsibility for what, for patient care, for person care, right? Instead of just looking at us as a condition and instead of just a person. And Dr. Judith Joseph, who is an amazing psychiatrist, said something so fascinating to me. She said, stop thinking about it that way. And I love when people tell me the same truth through a different lens that automatically changes the way I feel about something. So the same way I was talking about strength training, I used to think about it as like, I'm just trying to get lose weight or get skinny. Now I think about it as being empowered and strong in my body so that I have a long life. She said to me, stop thinking about it as you have to do all the work and start thinking about it as you are part of the treatment team. And the more information that you have and you can relate to us, then we can help you even better than we could before. And it was like a aha moment.
That's a, like, as my 6-year-old, he's experimenting with language, sometimes in a not so great way, by the way. But he's been playing around with the phrase mind blown this week.
Oh, I love it.
And so like everything, he's just like, I mean, can you believe that? Mind blown. But I'm going to say to you right now, mind blown, right?
Like,
you know, yes. You know, I think about menopause and the things that I knew about menopause when I was growing up, right? Nothing but shame, first of all, like just a weird, inexplicable shame around this part of a woman's life and hot flashes. That's it.
Well, you know what? That's actually more than I knew. I mean, all I knew about menopause when I was little, I mean, my mom never talked to me about it, right? All I remember is that when I used to watch All in the Family, there was an episode where Edith Bunker yelled at Archie and they were like, she's going through the change. And I was like, what? The change, right? Remember? And I thought she was in her 70s. So it didn't even occur to me that menopause was anything that happened until you were really old. Turns out Jean Stapleton was 47 when she was Edith Bunker. Okay, talk about how haircuts really make the difference in
the
way we perceive people.
Yeah.
But it's that I didn't even know about hot flashes. I didn't even understand very much about that. Even in well into my 40s, I don't think I understood anything about it. And I certainly didn't understand what the implications of the severity of perimenopausal symptoms could be for me after menopause, right? So there is research that says if you have very severe hot flashes and, you know, the severity and frequency, you have a high frequency and high severity of hot flashes, that can indicate, it can indicate that you will have more cardiac issues post-menopause. So these are things that it's not like, okay, let's just talk about what's happening in peri. Menopause is this unbelievable opportunity and really the last opportunity that you have to really take control of your health. Because after this, it's not preventative. Then then everything from here on out that you haven't done to sort of safeguard your health, you're going to have to, you're playing catch up, right? So this is, again, another reason that I think we have to start paying attention to menopause as a marker in our lives. Stop conflating it with aging, which, by the way, we should have no shame around aging to begin with. But that's where I think menopause and aging, it's that perfect confluence of ew, gross, and now she's ugly and dry, you know, whatever.
Yes.
Whatever.
Yes. Whatever ugly that, and dry. Yes.
Ugly
a
and
shriveled
dry.
Up old woman. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. The crone instead
the crone.
Of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Instead of the goddess, you know, of being wise. And there's just so many sort of almost like Jungian conceptions of what age is. So it is the responsibility of people with privilege to start screaming from the rooftops in order to make changes. We have to make changes for everybody to kind of heal successfully. And I would say there's a lot of healing that needs to be done in the world right now. We're not moving in the right direction.
No, we're not. We're not moving in the right direction. But I do think, as you said, that Gen X is pushing for us to move in the right direction. Mostly Gen X women. I do think that we're, It is the first generation that is saying, nope, I'm not taking the status quo of how you treat me medically, of how you want me to look in a magazine, of how you expect me to dress, or how you expect me to disappear at a certain age. We're not taking it, and we deserve better, and you will treat us better.
By the time mm-hmm. Gen Z gets to menopause, they're going to know exactly what to do. This will be just another day in the office. This will be,
totally.
They will expect
totally.
Benefits from their companies. They will know yep. exactly how to, this is our legacy in a lot of ways,
yes.
I think, is to change this narrative, not just about menopause. Menopause is just the tip of the iceberg, but about aging and the way that we do it. And look, also Gen X, we were born at this insane time in history, right? We were taught, oh, we need to be skinny. We need to disappear. We need to look a certain way. We need to get married. We still got all of that traditional bullshit. But then we're also in a position to be much healthier and happier than generations before us, right? We know about 10,000
yes.
steps. We know smoking is bad for you. We know that sitting is bad for you. We know that strength training is good for you. And we also are the beneficiaries of, like, you know, real technological advances in cosmetic dermatology.
So we really are.
We don't look our age,
We don't look our age.
You know?
Not
like,
at all. Not
do
at all.
Do what you want. Get the Botox, get the filler, get the face.
Oh, you get the things.
I don't care.
You get all the things. No. You do what makes you happy.
Do what makes you happy. That doesn't stop you from aging. It means that you are going to age on your terms.
The way that you want to age.
The way that you want to age. And whether that's like a Justine Bateman who says, I'm never going to touch my face, to, you know, I don't know. Like a lot of Real Housewives. Whatever you decide
whatever,
to do.
Whatever. However you want to be in the world. Says the girl that's gonna have to leave this interview and go run to the Botox doctor to get my tour Botox. I've got it. It's time to get it. Time to get a turbo freshen up, a fresher. But yeah, I love that. We are gonna take a quick break here. Be right back.
At Best Western, we can't promise you the perfect family beach vacation. We can't promise that it won't rain. Or that you won't get a sunburn, or that your family won't endearingly call you Lobster Mom for weeks afterward. What we can promise is a warm welcome and a comfortable room amidst all the joyful chaos. Lobster Mom. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western, with over 4,200 hotels worldwide.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. With blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar. Discover legendary tastes with America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
We were talking earlier before we started recording about how we don't see enough out there about how to dress as a woman.
That is something I'll tell you. I did this tour with Clinton. We did a Stacey and Clinton tour, which was not a what not to wear thing. That was like in person live. We wanted to do it as an experiment. We made up quite a few years ago, and you know everybody thought we still hated each other's guts, and there was this, mm-hmm. some big feud, which. Also, part of growing up was like, I don't want to hold on to grudges and I don't want to grudge.
I don't
have time to be angry. I just don't.
No.
There's too many other things in the world to do and other things to much bigger things to be angry at. Mm-hmm. Not people that I actually loved and cared about. You know, like that.
Yes.
Let's just resolve those issues. So Clinton and I went on tour and it was astounding because it was such good market research. Right. All of these women that I have been talking to about menopause, about what to do with, you know, feelings of depression or helplessness or low self-esteem because they've gained weight or body weight redistribution and not knowing how to dress has become this huge topic, really, between women, you know, 45 to 70. Where are the clothes for them? They don't want to look like their kids. They want to invest in quality pieces, but not everybody's quality is the same thing, right? I really tell people, think about what you want your wardrobe budget to be. Most people don't actually sit down and write out how much money they're going to spend, whether it's monthly or yearly or weekly or whatever, on clothes or accessories or anything. We usually just buy things that we like or when we need something. But if you stick to a budget, then you decide, where am I investing in the most quality I can afford? That's my first thing, right? I'm like, so let's talk about as we age, the first thing I talk about is you're investing in the best quality that you can afford and create a budget so that you don't get into trouble, right? That you really understand what part of your savings or your, you know, salary you want to spend on this. And the other thing that I realized is that, you know, less is more. This idea that you need something new every single time you go out is a really youth-obsessed fashion industry, beauty industry advertising bullshit, right? That if that culture, that kind of acquisition stage, we're not there anymore. And I will say that I am very bored of people telling me that women in middle age, all you need is a capsule wardrobe, right? A capsule
I'm so bored. I'm so bored by the capsule wardrobe.
Wardrobe, coastal grandma, cottagecore, all the shit. And because I think they've got it wrong. Capsule wardrobe, when most people discuss it, are talking about things that are sort of your no-fail items that all work together that are usually in one color, right? Whether it's black or cream or gray or navy. They're all neutrals, very easy to mix and match, blah, blah, blah. That's not how I think about a capsule wardrobe. When I say less is more, I want you to have 6 to 10 go-to outfits that you have put together in your wardrobe that you hang together with shoes and accessories so that when you don't have time to kind of style yourself or play in your closet, you have your MVPs right there, right in front of you. And I usually say 3 business casual, 2 business, 2 for going out or kind of more formal. You decide what works for your life. But there are actual outfits with color, pattern, texture, shine, not just black. You know, I want you to have more creativity and joy around the way that you dress as you age than we've been led to believe that you can have. And so one, that means looking for clothes that don't make you look like you're 25. That's the hard part. There's not a lot of stuff out there. If you want to look relevant, not trendy, that isn't quite expensive. But I do think more is coming. Good things are coming. I have a lot of faith in what's kind of, you know, in the, you know, coming down the line. But I also think that it is the way that we think about accepting, right? I mean, I said this in my book 10 years ago, The Truth About Style. I was like, the you know, the first thing you have to do in order to have style is the improv exercise, yes and, right? The yes is the really hard part. The yes is accepting, okay, maybe, you know what? Maybe I'm not going to get rid of that 10 pounds. The yes is accepting, maybe I am going to have a little mushier arm or a little mushier tummy. Maybe, maybe, whatever it is. You are going to have to accept that maybe your skin is going to get a little crepier. You are not all, you know, Hollywood starlets who have every, you know, service available to them. What is the realistic view that you can have of yourself that is purely acceptance? That's the yes. And that even means acknowledging the things that you don't like. Because when you acknowledge what you love about your body and you're able to accept what you don't love about your body, then you're still working holistically with your body, because then you can take control. And I don't like to say hide. I like to say consciously camouflage the things you don't like. But you can only
do that. And it's okay not to like those. I think that
we've
kind of been fed this message recently that, like, no, you have to have radical acceptance of your body. But I think it's okay to not have that, to have things be like, you know, there's things I don't like and maybe things that I would like to camouflage or, you know, not hide, but like to, you know, clothes that just amplify other parts of me. And it's okay if you don't radically accept you. Yes.
I actually think that's radical acceptance. So I would argue that radical acceptance is being okay with not loving everything, because that still means that you are acknowledging that you are a full, whole person with flaws and that you don't love everything. But if you know what you love and what you don't love, that automatically teaches you, okay, If I know what I like about my body and what I don't like about my body and what I want to say to the world, then I can accent what I love and I can consciously camouflage what I don't love. That is, to me, radical acceptance as much as this idea that you have to love everything about yourself. That almost doesn't make any sense to me at all, because it's like saying there's only light and no dark. There's only white and no black. You know, it's very hard to say that radical acceptance is all positivity. Radical acceptance is being able to sit with discomfort and not be okay with everything. That to me is radical acceptance.
Yes.
And that's the yes part of yes and. That's mm-hmm. the very hard part. But once you get past that, the and is everything you get to do creatively to do what you want with your style. Once you know what it is you're working with and what you want to highlight and what you don't,
mm-hmm.
the world is yours. The world is your oyster in terms of how creative you can be. And I see, you know, it's funny. I was giving a talk at sort of a large fashion corporation. It was sort of like an all-hands meeting. And I was talking a little bit about the generational differences that we see in boomers and Gen X, as opposed to younger millennials, maybe older millennials still kind of fall into the Gen X category, the Zillennials, as I like to call them.
Yes. Zillennial with an X.
Exactly. So it's an Xennial. But younger millennials and Gen Z, they have very different ideas, right? You know, and again, it's to go back to that idea of how to versus me too. Gen X and boomers will say to me, I don't know what to wear. I don't know how to flatter my body. I don't know, you know, what's going to make me look taller or thinner or, you know, what we taught on what not to wear wasn't just style. It was geometry. We were like, this is going to fit you better. This counterbalances a larger part of your body, you know, blah, 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 all of that sort of thing. Color forms. But when you get younger, they're like, who are you to tell me what to wear? Who are you to say this is flattering? What flattering to whom? And all of these questions are valid. All of these viewpoints are valid. But it means that they look at style in a very different way. They look at it as personal expression outside of cultural context. And if they want to do that, great. But cultural context still exists, right? So when I say, make all your choices the way you want to, you also have to realize that there, you know, as much as you control the narrative, there is always going to be context against that narrative. And whether or not you're in alignment with it or not is completely up to you. But if you want a job, let's say, in a very conservative law firm, and I would say, well, you know, chances are you will have a better presentation, right, at your interview if you are wearing, you know, the traditional, I don't know, kind of cool three-piece pinstripe suit, right? Can be modern.
Yeah, but can be modern,
That is a visual language that this company will understand. As opposed to, let's say you're interviewing to be a dominatrix, then go ahead and wear the latex cat suit, and that will make more sense. You see what I mean? So, but if you want to wear the latex cat suit to the bank interview, that's your choice.
Does that mean
you're going to get the job?
Maybe not. I tried on a cat suit yesterday, actually.
Oh,
I had. It's not latex, okay? But it's an old Norma Kamali, one of those like onesie black tight suits, and I found it at this vintage shop up in the Catskills. Because I think a lot of older supermodels have been like getting rid of their clothes at this vintage shop,
right?
And this cat suit was not flattering for me, and I will not be wearing it, and I will be passing it on to someone else. But it was actually I bought it when it was flattering for me, and I found it in the back of my closet. And
I see.
But it was very liberating to get rid of it, to pass it on to someone that will love it, because I don't anymore, and I've been holding on to this for 5-6 years now. It felt good to be like, we had our time together.
Yes, thank you.
And now it is finished. Thank you.
And now it is finished. Go have a wonderful love relationship with somebody else. This is my deep, deep belief. So for the 10 years that I was on What Not to Wear, I was inundated with clothing. And every year I would have a private sale in my apartment. It was around 40 to 50 people, right?
I forgot about that sale.
Everything was $40, whether it was like Yves Saint Laurent or Zara, didn't matter. And everything that I made on the sales, I would match and donate to the Animal Medical Center. And I did that for years. And now, I don't know if you're familiar with Christine Barbaric. She used to work at Refinery 29. She was
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, Christine.
So she and I are both thrifters, and we both, you know, we love vintage, and we have been throwing garage sales like forever. We've done this so many times. And now it's like I just clean out my closet all the time because I do not believe in being sentimental. I know when it's time to break up with something, and I am absolutely fine to do it. And I guarantee you, for all of these people, I used to keep things in my closet because I took a photograph in 2007 in that dress and I looked so good. I'm just going to hold on to it just in case.
Just in case.
I'm never going to wear that dress again. I'm never going to look that way in that dress again. Why? Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
So one of the things that's really important to me is that I make the distinction 9 times out of 10 when I let go of something, I never even remember that I had it.
No,
and I really encourage your listeners to realize that if you are holding on to things for sentimentality, it's different if your grandmother passed away and she knitted you a sweater. Great. Keep it in a hope chest. I don't care. But,
sure.
But when it's something that you're holding on to because of the way you used to look in something that does not have any kind of relevance now, break up. Breakups are healthy. It is time. I have broken up with 5-inch heels. I have broken up with them.
I have too. And you know what? I tried to wear them again. I did this photo shoot for new author photos because I hadn't taken them forever. In a hot pink suit. And I put on these old 5-inch heels of mine. I couldn't walk in those heels. We're not doing that anymore. That is not my season.
But I'm happy if you take a photo in them and you can stand up for 3 seconds and like they take the picture and then you can take them off for five minutes.
And then they went immediately to Goodwill. I drove directly from that photo shoot to Goodwill. Yes.
And the other thing that I feel like people don't kind of understand is that you can be regenerative with your closet and your wardrobe. And this is something that I also talk to people, certainly in midlife, about, is that don't forget, you can give clothes to Goodwill and get a receipt where you get a tax write-off for everything that you donate, right?
Yes.
And if you give clothes to people who vintage dealers or secondhand dealers or anywhere on consignment, you can expect an eighth to a quarter of the original price in most cases, right? And what winds up happening is that you take that money and go put it back into your wardrobe, into something you want now.
Yes, exactly. So this
is a very healthy breakup. It's also a healthy financial breakup. I think as we get older, I want that whole less is more philosophy applies to everything in my life. I want less of everything. I want less furniture. I want less. I want fewer friends, not because I don't like people, but because I feel overwhelmed by the amount of people to keep in touch with and keep track of. I want everybody to know, obviously, that I care about them. But also, there comes a point where, you know, you kind of get a free pass if I know that you're friends with my friends, right? Like, that circle never changes. Because the older you get, the more discerning you become.
The more discerning you get. I know if you're my people. Yes.
Yeah.
You need 10 minutes with somebody, and I'm like, I want to meet you again,
or I never want to see you again. That, to me, is also a great blessing when it comes to age, right? We are more discerning on every level. But this idea of having to worry about less as I age allows me the opportunity to do more with my time. So the same way that, you know, Barack Obama famously in that Vanity Fair article said, I only have blue suits or gray suits because I have much bigger things to worry about, right?
Yes.
He was like, I've got to keep my decision tree as like precise as possible.
Mm-hmm.
One, you can do that with your wardrobe without having it all black or all gray or whatever. That's why you put the MVPs together. But also this idea of cut out the fat. And, you know, not to refer to people as fat, but just that whole idea of that acquisitive ACQ phase is over, not inquisitive. The acquisitive phase is over.
Mm-hmm.
The acquisitive phase is over, actually, to make room for the inquisitive phase. So you can be more curious and have more adventure and really start to take stock of what matters. Because the other thing about middle age is I do think it changes our relationship to mortality. Once you lose a parent in particular,
You realize,
you're next. And this is not to be like, you know, oh God, she's going to a really dark place. I think actually the next big industry is going to be death. And I think it's going to be death because it's time to change our relationship to it. We see psychedelics at end of life. We're talking about hip funeral homes and the way that you can be buried in a sack that will disintegrate faster than a casket, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds like really, graphic or brutal to say. But the thing is, you recognize that you have fewer days in front of you than behind you. And it makes those days that much more valuable.
Yes.
And that is something that I think we tend to forget, especially I did, when I was like locked in the idea that like, oh my God, my youth is gone. You have to grieve before you can accept and then you can thrive. But it's hard, and it's hard on all of us. And I think what Gen X is doing right now is making that path a little less bumpy.
Making that transition
a little less bumpy for a lot more people.
Mm-hmm. 100%. 100%. I could talk to you all day long.
I miss you. That's how I talk to you all day long.
I know. I know. I can't because I do have to go get to my Botox doctor because she's
hard. You have to go get to your Botox doctor. I live in Brooklyn and I'm like, I have to go into town.
To go into town. Into the little town. Onto the island, please. I want you to tell everyone how they can find you and support you best right now.
Well, it's really funny that you say that. So, you know, normally I tell people Instagram Live, Instagram is really where I do most of my things. It's where I do my lives with experts. And I am on TikTok, but I can't seem to get back into my account. So I haven't posted anything there in a long time. But that's really, I don't have a website. Any announcements that I make about what's coming up are usually on Instagram. But there is something to look that's coming that I just want to tell you about that is called the Marble Collective. And I say this because I think women who are career women who have any kind of public facing aspect to their careers, like you, are going to find this really interesting. It is a place where all of your socials are held. You have an account. It is visible to the public. And then it starts pulling every speech that you've done from the internet, every article about you. It does it. And once you start, once it starts pulling, it pulls via AI. Then you start teaching it what you want it to pull and what you don't want it to pull. It will pull everything otherwise. But you can actually create an entire chronological and visual timeline of your career and a way in which to connect with like-minded people or associates or people in the same field as you. And that is something that's coming that I really can't wait for. They're in beta right now. But when I saw how great this is going to be for professional women, I immediately got on board. And if you're interested in menopause, it's like if I'm giving you a menopause reading list, here are all the best books that I've read. That's a resource that you have right away. You know. That way, it curtails the amount of work you have to do to get to anything you want to get to. So the founder's name is Kristen Thomas. And yeah, I think that this is, I'm excited about it. So I am a founding member. But I am a founding member solely because I really believe this is going to be a great way for women, but for everybody to interact.
Yeah, I want in. I want in the beta. Yeah, this sounds great.
I will totally hook you up.
Put in a good word for me. I love it. Perfect. All right. I am going to say goodbye now, my friend. Go have a wonderful day. Go into the village. It was so good to see you.
It was great to see you. I hope we can talk soon.
Yeah, more soon. Bye. And that is all we have for today. Stacey is the best. She is a gem and a national treasure. And she always makes me think about something that I didn't expect to think about. Oh. We have a lot more episodes coming up on women's hormones, perimenopause, menopause, all of the influencers and all of the celebrities who are now selling you stuff around this because it's become a thing. It's definitely become a thing. All of that to come. I am actually getting on a plane right now to go to Sicily to try to solve this 100-year-old murder for the Sicilian Inheritance podcast. I mean, literally, I'm leaving the house right now to get on the plane to go. And I'll be sharing all of the things with you on my Instagram, all of the food. I'm going to make you hungry. I'm going to make you really hungry. I will say here, if you haven't ordered the Sicilian Inheritance yet, please, please put the order in. I know pre-orders can be annoying, but there's a reason. It helps a book so much. It is the best way to support me. And honestly, the best way to support this show is by pre-ordering the Sicilian Inheritance right now. And also do other nice things for yourself today because you deserve nice things. We all deserve nice things. I'm going to be eating pasta in like 16 hours. It's crazy. Okay. Love you all. Bye.
At Best Western, we can't promise you the perfect family beach vacation. We can't promise that it won't rain, or that you won't get a sunburn, or that your family won't endearingly call you Lobster Mom for weeks afterward. What we can promise is a warm welcome and a comfortable room amidst all the joyful chaos. Lobster Mom. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western, with over 4,200 hotels worldwide.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.